Hello and welcome to Volume 152 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue, we'll discuss Alabama property taxes. We'll talk about prescribed fire. We'll talk about the subject of economic development and also how to get reliable cell service in rural areas. This program is brought to you through the generous contribution of Forester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with consulting foresters. You can access the site through ForesterSearch.com, or there's a link on this page. You'll be given a roster of consulting foresters who can guide you through the next steps you'll face as a forest landowner. I'm Hayes Brown with the Alabama Forest Owners Association, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. There's a greater trend now for people to work from home, and when that home is in a rural area with limited cell coverage, there can be a problem. Our first guest works in solving this problem with a company called Starlink. He's Robert King. Welcome, Robert.
Hey, how are you today?
First, I guess, why don't you tell us a little bit about Starlink?
Well, Starlink is a internet solution that actually SpaceX is responsible for. And many of you probably have seen the satellites come across the night sky and wondered what in the world that was, but it's a very good high speed, low latency, easy to access internet solution for rural America.
Okay,
and
so
really rural parts throughout the world.
And so it's different from a cell tower system, right?
It is. It's very different. The access goes directly to the satellites that are in permanent orbit up over the Earth, and it's just a vast improvement upon the cell phone experience or dial up. Or I find it even better than high speed internet, through the cable.
What do you think Starlink offers that the type technology it offers that's different from other available options for people?
Well, the primary thing is it is available in rural areas, and it is target marketed in that direction as well. What it can offer is someone that's in rural Alabama or rural Georgia or wherever, they have a plug and play sort of deal here. It literally, the equipment comes to you. You can be up and going in 10 minutes, maybe. You just got to set the, what amounts to like a little satellite outside. And it goes directly to a router box, and literally it adjusts itself as long as your satellite has a view of the sky, and you can be up and going quickly.
So really, you just need electrical power, right?
Right.
That's it, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. Electrical power. That's right.
And do you have to go to
the Starlink website and see that if it is available in your area, but that map of availability is growing daily with Starlink, and it's a real big deal for rural America.
Does it need an open canopy right where the unit is, or what other things would somebody need?
Right, it will need a clear view of the sky there, and the ours is facing northward. But I kind of think where that needs to be will depend somewhat upon your location, as it works off of multiple satellites, and it works off of each unit works off of multiple satellites at a time. So its exact positioning changes throughout the day. I've looked out and seen the satellite. It orients itself to the best place.
So. Mm-hmm. Is it a monthly subscription, kind of like a cell contract or what?
It is. It sure is. You've got about a $500-$600 upfront for equipment, and then $110 a month subscription there. But it's such an improvement that, it's really been worth it for us in running our business and everything that way.
Can you also get television from the unit?
Well, you can subscribe to any of the internet television services mm-hmm. that are offered out there, and it will work great through that system. We have cut out our satellite, and I think we actually use YouTube TV, but it works great through the system.
Okay. Finally, what do you think this type of technology, what kind of effect it can have on the value of rural land?
Well, you know, the pandemic started a big trend of work from home, or it actually accelerated that. And, you know, communication is everything with that. So being able to communicate from rural America the same way that somebody does, you know, that has high-speed internet access through the cables, there is really, really big, and it brings that ability to someone that's, you know, in the middle of 100 acres out here in rural America. So I kind of think it will increase the pressure on pricing on rural property as people get familiar with this technology and rely upon it. They can get out and literally be anywhere and do the function that we've gotten accustomed to over the last couple of years.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you, Robert. We appreciate that very much.
Absolutely.
Gary Faulkner is a returning guest to Capital Ideas Live. He's with the Alabama Forestry Commission and works in the area of economic development. Hello, Gary.
Hello, Hayes. Good morning.
I understand that Canfor has announced the opening of a sawmill in Mobile. And so generally speaking, how has Alabama fared in the economic development game, and what specifics do you have about this particular mill?
Well, thanks, and it's a delight to be here with you and the audience again. To hit the heart of your questions, the southern U.S. and Alabama in particular has been an ideal geographical location for forest product capital investments, particularly for southern yellow pine lumber. With a south timber productivity, sustainability, predominant private land ownership, logistical advantages such as rail, interstate highways, international ports of call, we are North America's key region for business expansion. In addition, though, there is a pro-business environment in Alabama that we repeatedly hear compliments about from business leaders from outside the state. Of course, Alabama being the heart of the region, we are realizing significant announcements within the forest product sector. In fact, over the last decade, the state has experienced approximately $7 billion, that's a B, in new and expanding capital investments in more than 11,000 new jobs. But more importantly, we have strengthened our footprint within lumber markets. In particular, pine lumber production has been consistently yet sustainably growing. Canfor's announcement is really a strong example of this trend. Specifically, Canfor announced on July 28th that a new state-of-the-art world-class lumber mill will be located in Mobile, Alabama. Now, it has a capital investment of $210 million, with lumber capacity announced at 250 million board feet per year. Now, this operation will incorporate a biomass lumber drying system, and that will ensure a long-term competitive facility. By the way, Canfor has three existing pine lumber operations in southwest Alabama. And this new investment is slated to replace Canfor's older facility in Mobile while protecting their existing jobs. An additional note is that Canfor, who is based in Vancouver, British Columbia, has their U.S. headquarters located in Mobile. And this, therefore, is quite a strong complement to Alabama.
You mentioned several new sawmills and expansion of existing mills, which have occurred over the past 5 years. Can you give us, it's hard to keep track of this as a whole, but can you give us an idea of the scale of this activity and what it means to the state?
Good question, Hayes. Looking back a few years, large new sawmills of mention are Two Rivers, Westervelt, Rex Lumber, Georgia Pacific, in addition to Canfor. Now, these new mills alone provide greater than 1 billion board feet of additional yearly lumber production capacity in Alabama. However, we just cannot discount our existing lumber industry, as it creates more expansion opportunities than our new announcements. In fact, production estimates indicated that Alabama is now the third largest softwood lumber production state in the U.S. And for context, Alabama is increasing and processing approximately 40 million tons of wood annually across all species and product types. And yet the timber resource continues to expand year over year. But circling and returning back around to the Canfor announcement, Canadian capital investment has continued flowing into the southern states as well, and particularly Alabama. And this is due to a lot of factors such as environmental policy, a changing regulatory and business environment north of the border, major insect outbreaks and wildfires within Canadian forests themselves. So the southern U.S. business climate is really ideal for welcoming their manufacturing interest due to forest productivity, net growth, and sustainability of its timber resources, infrastructure, and, of course, business-friendly environment. To this end, Alabama has a footprint of five major Canadian manufacturers, Canfor, Interfor, Resolute, West Fraser, and Tolko. These companies account for eight separate mill operations here in Alabama. So Hayes Canadian Investment in Forest Products has been a welcome business partner in Alabama.
Okay. Well, Gary, thank you for that. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, sir.
Jessica Little's with Larson and McGowan and works with people to understand the property tax system in Alabama, particularly current use. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you, Hayes. Good morning.
First, remind our listeners what current use is actually and what type land qualifies.
Okay. Well, basically, current use is valuation of the agricultural property at a rate less than the real estate market value. So it ensures that a farmer or a timberland owner is not penalized by paying a higher tax on their land that could have a higher market value if it was converted out of agricultural into some type of development or other use. That it includes row crop, pasture, or timberland. And I don't think there's a minimum acreage. We have had instances where if it's under 5 acres, you may have to provide additional documentation. But it basically allows a lower tax rate and some motivation for the landowner to keep it in agricultural property.
Okay. What would be the process of applying for current use? I mean, is that a form you fill out or is someone you go see, or what's the process?
Well, if you have current use, you're good. You should not have to reapply on a yearly basis in Alabama. Our tax year runs from October 1st to September 30th. So if you purchase a parcel of land before October 1st, you have until December 31st of that year. You must turn it in by the end of the year. If you purchase it after October 1st, you have until December 1st of the following year. And most of the revenue commissioners have the forms online, and I think there's a link on y'all's website to the form. You've got to make sure you apply, because if you purchase the parcel of land and don't re-enroll, it's going to be classified as the previous owner had it. But in any case, I would recommend following up with the revenue commissioner's office just to ensure that everything's in place and that you've done everything. Sometimes they each have a different format or a different way of handling things. So it's always in your best interest to get a relationship with your revenue commissioner and find out that you've done everything you need to.
So those forms are found with the revenue commissioner. I noticed in one county, I think it was Covington County, the revenue commissioner's website actually had how to apply on the front page of his website, which I thought was a nice touch. So it's good to know that information is readily available. What do you look out for so that you don't lose current use for some reason?
So basically, current use would be lost or removed if there was any change of ownership, which sounds like if you sell the property. But if you and your spouse own a piece of property and you convert it to an LLC, the revenue commissioner would likely require you to reapply. They're supposed to send out an application if there is a change, but, you know, mail, and I would always follow up just to make sure that you can follow up and get the application. We even had one instance in Mobile County where it was a group ownership and they changed a percentage. One owner gave another owner a different percentage and the revenue commissioner threw it out of current use and they were shocked to receive a large, much larger tax bill. Luckily, we were able to go down and discuss it and work it out with the revenue commissioner and they re-enrolled it. But you just, any change that, anything that would flag it to the revenue commissioner, they could remove it. Also, if you have, if your property is in a trust and maybe you have a management, a different bank trust department takes it over, sometimes the revenue commissioner will see that as an ownership change. And so we have to go back and you won't, you may not receive a notification. So we usually go back and try to explain the situation and usually they're pretty reasonable. It depends on the county.
Okay.
One of the biggest things is if you sell your property, just make sure that you have a clause in the purchase agreement that the new owner would be responsible for any rollback taxes if they don't enroll in current use, because otherwise you might be responsible with 3 years taxes as it would have been in the fair market value.
If that new owner does something different from what you're doing, you could have a rollback, right? Okay.
Right, right. Okay, so
Jessica,
in all of our purchase agreements, you just put that in there that it's their responsibility.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jessica. We appreciate that. John Stivers is passionate about prescribed fire and forests, and particularly helping people qualify as a certified prescribed burn manager. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Hayes. Good to be here.
What do you say is the benefit of becoming certified as a prescribed burn manager?
Well, there's several. These aren't in any particular order, but probably the one that floats to the top for most landowners or practitioners, people that's looking to become certified, is the 1995 Right to Burn Law clearly offers significant liability protection if, that big old two-letter word, if you do certain things, and becoming certified is one of them. So that's a big benefit of becoming that, achieving that credential. Another one, obviously, is you're just going to learn about the science behind fire behavior and smoke management. And it's basically a real deep understanding of fuels, weather, topography, and ignition methods. Those are the four things that affect fire behavior and fuel. So we spend a good bit of time in that 32-hour course drilling down into those four elements. And that way people see what's behind the veil. There's nothing to fear. There's nothing magical about it once you understand and apply the science. So that's another real benefit, is you're not guessing at it anymore. You know exactly in advance of dropping the match what you can expect to happen under a certain set of weather parameters and fuel conditions. And then another one, these last two are kind of tied together. It's going to increase landowner or practitioner confidence, and that equates to capacity. Right now we have a shortage of people that want to burn. They're kind of afraid of it. So when you become certified and you understand the science and you apply the science, you're going to be more confident. Now, that doesn't mean you're cocky. It just means you understand and apply the science, and that's going to translate into more capacity, more people that can do good burning, which is at the end of the pipe. What falls out is you're expanding the safe use of prescribed fire. And, you know, right now we're only burning about 1 million acres a year across Alabama's 23 million acre forest of the landscape. And I mean, that's good, but, you know, we got a lot of room to go. So that's really the biggest benefits, is the liability protection, learn the science, and be more confident and expand the safe use.
How often do these courses happen, and when do you know of one being offered in the future?
Well, typically we have three a year: June, July, and August. And those dates vary, but the Alabama Forest Commission, they announce those, they advertise those on their website. But typically we do one in June in Foley, down in South Alabama, and Auburn University in July, and the Alabama Fire College in Tuscaloosa in August. And so that's when we do the primarily three a year. And this year we've had a few extras that we've done. And we've already certified, we got two more to go. We certified 170 new practitioners this year already.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very good. Well, John, thanks for letting us know about that topic. We appreciate it very much.
Yes, sir.
And that's all the time we have for this issue. Our thanks go to Robert King, Gary Faulkner, Jessica Little, and John Stivers. It's great news each time we hear about a new mill being planned or an existing mill being expanded. In the Southeast, and Alabama in particular, continues to be recognized as having favorable conditions for wood businesses. And that's especially true when the companies were originally sourced in Canada and they noticed that Alabama has the supply of raw materials needed to sustain a sawmill. Over time, these facilities should improve the outlook for long-term businesses such as ours with a 30 to 35-year time horizon or longer. And hopefully, these mills will be running strong long after we're gone, and everybody will look back at this time and say, we must have been doing something right. So low taxes, a robust land base, a pro-business environment, a ready workforce, all are things that improve Alabama's chance of attracting new industries, new investments, and a renewed interest in working on the land. On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown, thanking you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.